next, we have a special with James Pearce. Stephen managed to grab 26 minutes with him before the pod, where he could discuss all the questions that you sent in and obviously the transfers and transfer dealings of Liverpool in the pre-season window so far. So tune in your ears.
Okay. Okay, listen, James, thanks a million for coming back on to have a chat with us. We really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
No, always, always. I suppose, listen, first thing we'll get out of the way, it's the thing that, you know, everybody's sick of listening to, and at the same time, everybody wants to know about. It's the old Virgil van Dijk and Kieta situations. And listen, everybody has their own idea on where things are at. Where, you know, he's going to hand in a transfer request. This is van Dijk. Or, you know, Kieta wants out or he doesn't want to. You know, there's so much stuff going around Twitter at the moment. It's a minefield. You're nearly better off ignoring it. But as someone that we here at the Day Trippers, and I'm not just saying it because you're on tonight, you know, I regularly say it, you're one of the only people I would actually take a steer from in terms of where we're at, because you tend to have a good feeling on, you know, what's going on within the club. Where do you see things at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think just very frustrating on both of those fronts, really. I don't think, you know, nothing's really changed in the last few weeks. I think when the Mohamed Salah deal got done, I think, you know, it was pretty clear then that was kind of the first of three kind of key areas that Klopp had kind of really pinpointed, you know, and the other two clearly being, you know, a centre half and a centre midfielder. And I think there was a sense then, speaking to people at the club, that, you know, Salah was always going to be the easiest one of the three to get done, because, you know, Roma were willing sellers, and yeah, it took a few weeks to haggle and get the deal done, but it was certainly a lot more straightforward than Van Dijk or Keita. And yeah, I mean, I don't think either of those has really moved along. I think, you know, it's been well documented that, you know, both those players, you know, want to be at Anfield. I don't think that's in any doubt whatsoever. I think, you know, Keita articulated that to Leipzig when he was back there last week. You know, Van Dijk, as we all know, has articulated that, you know, a few weeks beforehand, similarly, that he was very keen to link up with Liverpool. But both of those clubs, Southampton and RB Leipzig, are adamant that those players aren't for sale. And, you know, I know obviously there's a lot of talk about, you know, Liverpool haven't put bids in and all the rest of it, but it doesn't work like that, because, you know, you don't put bids in unless you've had some kind of encouragement that a player is actually for sale. And you know, the reality is at the moment that neither of those players are. And yeah, I think, you know, as you said, it's probably, you know, the ball is in the players' courts in many ways. You know, how you know, there are, you know, is Van Dijk and is Keita really prepared to force the issue, you know, put in a transfer request, you know, that might be what it takes for Liverpool to have a realistic chance of getting them in this window.
Okay, yeah, and I think some people maybe think that it's like Football Manager, where you just keep on going back every week with a £2 million increase until they finally say yes. You know, as you say there, you open negotiations by, I would assume, seeing as there's some form of interest from the selling party to enter into any form of negotiation. And then it becomes the point of finding the middle ground where both people are willing to match what their expectations are.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And I think... And probably where they're a bit different with Van Dijk and Keita is that, you know, it's a much more sensitive issue with Southampton. I think, you know, it's no secret that Southampton were, you know, were fuming at the way that, you know, the Van Dijk thing played out in the public domain. I think, you know, that Liverpool have got to be very, very careful on that front. You know, they were told by Southampton, absolutely not a chance. We would sell him, and, you know, not only are we not prepared to sell him, we're certainly not prepared to sell him to Liverpool. That was what Liverpool were told. You know, I've had that confirmed at both ends, both, you know, people at Liverpool and at Southampton, that, you know, that they're absolutely sick to death of Liverpool coming in and you know, and buying their top talent, which has happened the last three summers. And so I think with Van Dijk, it's Liverpool know that there's not an awful lot they can do on that front until Southampton's position changes. I think if they reach a point, Southampton, where you know they don't want to, they realise that they're in danger of keeping an unhappy player who might not be anywhere near the player that they had in their hands last season, because his heart's no longer in it, then I think there's a possibility then that they would listen to offers, and Liverpool would hope that if they're listening to offers, then you know, Liverpool's money would be as good as anyone else's. But you know, I still think probably out of the two, that Keita is marginally the more likely. But both of them are just far from straightforward. And you know, I think the interesting thing, and I honestly genuinely don't know the answer to the question, is how long do Liverpool leave it? How long do they sit and wait and hope that the situation changes with Van Dijk and Keita? And at what stage do they go, do you know what, you know, we've got to go after a plan B?
Yeah, and actually that's a perfect segue, because my next question to you was, you know, that's a worry that a lot of fans out there have. We had a season whereby the end of 13-14, the summer of 14, we lose Luis Suarez, and we were all eggs in the basket for Alexis Sanchez. The player decides he doesn't want to come to us and chooses Arsenal over us. And all of a sudden, our plan B is a deadline day move for Mario Balotelli after we've signed Ricky Lambert, because we didn't have anything else lined up by the looks of things, or nothing else transpired. The players that we went after, the clubs didn't want to sell them, whatever happened. So I think that's a real fear that a lot of people have, that, you know, we've yet again built up this head of steam, this momentum last season under Jurgen Klopp. This was seen as a summer when really the club scrimped last summer. And lots of people think, including a lot of us at the Day Trippers, feel that maybe it was a sort of calculated risk that they took in not spending big money last year and nothing in the January window in order to secure top four and then go out and really make a mark in the market this summer. And what we're kind of wondering and hoping, maybe you have a little bit of insight, is do you think the club have some top quality backups lined up, and are they maybe already in discussions with those, in the hope that, you know, they have a fallback fairly quickly if these top deals don't happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one. I genuinely haven't heard names mentioned in terms of a plan B. You know, I know centre back wise, you know, Koulibaly was one that was certainly scouted reasonably heavily last season. But I don't think that would be a particularly easy deal to try and get done either. I think in midfield, I think Keita is almost looked upon as, you know, he was like, you know, by far and away the one that Klopp wanted, you believe, that would come in and enhance his starting 11. But it wouldn't necessarily surprise me if there wasn't, you know, a plan B to Keita, because it was, you know, he was looked upon as this, you know, I think, you know, Klopp no doubt views him as this kind of like complete midfielder who, you know, is such a kind of rare breed that you'd struggle to find another Keita kind of thing. But it's probably the centre back that worries me more, because, you know, I think someone said to me that Klopp was very much after a centre half who needs someone who's kind of at a higher level than Lovren, and that, you know, that would be someone. Because, you know, I think the idea would have been obviously that Van Dijk and Matip would be the first choice partnership. And, you know, I know Lovren divides opinion, and some people will say, you know, it shouldn't be that difficult to find someone who's better than him. But, you know, clearly Klopp rates Lovren highly, otherwise he wouldn't have given him that new £100,000 a week contract. But, you know, I think what worries me with the centre back thing is, you know, I would say, well, even if they, you know, they can't, he can't get Van Dijk, and he doesn't feel as if he can get someone who's better than Lovren, I'd say, well, you need to look at it differently and say you can certainly get someone who's better than Klavan, because, yeah, you know, I would be very uneasy about going into the new season with Klavan as the third choice centre-half.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of those things, isn't it? You know, Matip and Lovren both missed a lot of games last season through injury. we had to rely on Lucas and Clavin quite a lot. It looks, even though he's all smiles back at pre-season, it looks as though Lucas might be on his way this summer. And that might be just a case of sorting out who comes in from. Then again, lots of people have thought that for probably 5 years at this stage, and it still hasn't happened. But you would think that he's probably gone. Clavin, at this moment in time, is third choice. And as you say, if those two lads, you know, if Matip and Lovren are quite injury prone, you don't really want to be going into a Champions League season with Clavin as your third choice, because he is going to play a lot of games. So you have to upgrade that and make your third choice centre half, if it is that, or a competitive centre half for one of the two starting spots, a level above where Clavin's at, don't you really?
That's the area that worries me more than anything in terms of what Liverpool haven't done in the transfer market so far. Probably, you know, more so probably than not buying a left back so far. You know, I still think that's an absolute must that needs to be addressed. But centre half, I think, you know, it is the idea that, you know, that they would miss out on Van Dijk and not spend big on a centre half would worry me massively, because, you know, I think Clavin did very well last season. When you think probably, you know, £4 million for a 30-year-old Estonian, you know, new to the league, but he played a lot more than probably he would have expected when he signed for the club. And you know, as you said, with both Matip and Lovren not particularly robust, you know, you desperately need another frontline centre half, and you know, we all hope that Joe Gomez will kick on this season, but you know, there's a big chance that he'll go out on loan, and also he's played so little football in, you know, the last couple of years that you couldn't expect too much from him, even if he did stay put. So yeah, that would be my big worry at the moment, that you know, kind of ties in with what you said before about Echo the 2014 and wanting to, you know, desperately hoping that the same mistakes aren't repeated, because there's no doubt that, you know, Liverpool got in the Champions League then, everyone was expecting this massive summer, and you know, they squandered that opportunity. And you know, we all hope that that's not going to be the case this time around. I don't think it's a case of you know, panic stations yet. I think Salah's a great deal for Liverpool. You know, I think In Solanke, they've signed a talented young player who I think will blossom under Klopp's guidance, but they need to do a lot more. And, you know, certainly, I think a minimum of three more before the window shuts, and preferably much, much sooner than that, because, you know, with that Champions League qualifier on the horizon, they, you know, Liverpool really need, you know, their team for this season together and gelling during pre-season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And from that point of view as well, is, you know, that's another wonder. Is maybe some of the hold up down to the fact that there is that qualifier and people are waiting, you know, within the club to see, do we definitely make group stages? Because that's a big impact on where the financials are at. And I'm not talking about maybe these two main signings, but I'm talking about the other business that we do beyond that. You know, whether we hit group stages, which we all feel we should, but you know, if for any reason something happens and we don't hit the group stages, does that have a major impact on the players we can bring in for the season ahead?
Yeah, I mean, I must admit, speaking to people at this club, I don't get the impression that there's any sense of, you know, keeping your powder dry financially and waiting to see what happens with that playoff. I think it is just, you know, the fact that Klopp made it very, very clear that this summer it was all about, you know, quality rather than quantity. Not interested in you know, squad players and all the rest of it. And I think the players he's gone after, you know, two of the big three, have just been very, very difficult deals to get done. And you know, even with someone like Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, he wouldn't be someone that Liverpool view as a real frontline signing, but you know, he's another one that they're keen to get done. But I think, you know, that's another one that is just by this very nature going to drag on, because, you know, he's been in these transfer contract negotiations with Arsenal. You know, they won't want to lose him, but they also will be wary about him seeing out the last year of his contract and losing him for nothing. So, you know, I just think his future is almost, you know, is very much likely to not be decided until probably into August. And so it's just not been anywhere near as straightforward as I think anyone would have hoped for. But I don't think that's linked to like a sense of having to sit and wait to see whether Liverpool get the riches of being in the group stage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose another question I have is, do you feel that as a fan base we can be a little bit hypocritical? And I'll refer to the Kieto one and the let's take the Kieto one from our side and then Coutinho from the opposite side. And what I mean by that is we look at it and we say, of course we can just go in with the money and get Kieto. Just pay the money that needs to get him. He's gettable, you know. But RB Leipzig are a very, you know, financially stable club. They finished second in the Bundesliga. They're looking to push on and try and challenge Bayern next season. And it's their first ever attempt at the Champions League group stages as well. So, of course, they want to keep their team together as best they can and try and add to it rather than have it decimated. Yet, we as a club who finished fourth in the Premiership and, yes, financially stable, think that, you know, there's an absolute gall of PSG to think they can come in and sign Coutinho. He's not for sale at any price. And similarly, we've got a situation whereby Oxlade-Chamberlain's in the last year of his contract and we're like, of course Arsenal will sell him. You know, he's you know, they're not going to let him go for free. Yet we've got a player that everybody raves about in Emre Can in exactly the same situation, and we laugh off the idea that he might go to the Champions League finalists and the constant, you know, perennial Serie A winners. It's just a bit of a juxtaposition, really.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. I think that was just the nature of it, isn't it? And you know, maybe some people don't stop and think sometimes of when it's coming at you from the other direction. You know, like as you said, you know, say PSG and Coutinho. You know, if you've got a PSG fan saying, you know, why are we still monitoring Coutinho? Why have we not put in the bid?
Yeah,
and you know, the simple reason would be that, you know, Liverpool probably wouldn't even respond to it, because you know, they said, you know what do we have to do to tell you he is not for sale at any price? And you know, I think, you know, the similar, I remember asking Klopp about this last season, about, you know, a big part of kind of him in terms of taking the club forward wanted to be, you know, ensuring that Liverpool was looked upon as not just a stepping stone for top players like the Coutinho, but somewhere that they could actually, you know, put down roots and actually be successful and win trophies. And, you know, key to that is, you know, stopping the kind of talent drain that we've seen probably, you know, of the last decade, where too often Liverpool have lost their best players.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, you know, and so I don't think you could actually put a price on Coutinho this summer, for the simple reason that I think, you know, just image-wise, it would just be so damaging to sell Coutinho and the message that would send out about where Liverpool's at as a club. And for the very same reason, you know, that's exactly why Leipzig have taken the approach, you know, they have done, because, you know, as you said, they're in a quite a rare position in terms of, you know, they just do not need the money. But more than that, you know, they were Bayern Munich's closest challengers in the Bundesliga last season. And, you know, a big part of them, you know, establishing their reputation is going to be playing in the Champions League for the first time next season. And, you know, clearly they're doing everything they possibly can to keep that team together. So, I think, you know, it's obviously, you know, it's not been a straightforward summer so far, but you know, there's still a fair chunk of it left to go, which, you know, hopefully things will be looking much brighter in a few weeks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I suppose you may not want to answer this, and I totally understand if you don't. But has it become much more difficult for you since the Van Dijk leak? Has it become much more difficult for you and somebody the club has clearly trusted over the last, you know, number of years, because you've been close to so many stories, especially last summer when certain things were happening. Has what happened made it more difficult? Has it made your job more difficult in terms of dealing with the club and being able to interact with them? And I'm not saying be fed information, but at least be able to interact with them and say, this is what I've heard. Can you give me a steer on it at least, or whatever it might be?
I mean, probably not to the degree that I think some people probably think. I think, you know, I've seen a lot of comments on social media suggesting that,
Your job is gone now.
completely redundant now that no information's coming out of the club. I mean, that's quite ridiculous, because I like the fact that people say that, you know, there's no information's getting out, but you think, well, hang on a minute, what stories have actually been missed? You know, you'll have to remind me exactly, you know, what deals have suddenly come out of nowhere that haven't been reported. You know, the fact of the matter is that since Salah, you know, very little has actually changed, and there's been thousands and thousands of words said and written about Keita and Van Dijk, but you know, pretty much exactly where we were before that. But yeah, I think, you know, I'd be lying if I said it's completely the same as it was before. I think Liverpool's approach, you know, has changed, and I think, you know, there was, you know, I think there has been like a knock-on effect from what happened with Van Dijk, where, you know, and I think some people sometimes think that it's almost like a club call line that you can ring as a reporter and get a running commentary on every deal. And you know, it was never ever like that. That, you know, that's just ridiculous. You know, the idea that you could just
ring,
you know,
up and get
call
the
in
info.
And you know, where are we up to with the negotiations? You know, so the, you know, it doesn't, you speak to different people at all different levels of the club. And, you know, it's so, you know, have certain people at certain levels of the club been less forthcoming in probably the last 3 or 4 weeks? I'd say it probably have been. You know, I'm sure,
and understandably so.
I think, you know, they got their fingers burnt with what happened with Van Dijk, and so, you know, I think that was always likely. But you know, it's not as if also that is the only source of information and where you get things from. I think we saw with Salah, you know, there was a lot of information that was coming out from the Italian end, from Egypt as well. You know, even with Keita, you know, in the last few weeks, you know, journalists over in Guinea and you know, the German end, you speak to people over there. So it's not, to be honest, it hasn't really changed things much. You know, it's I think it's always been a, you know, people, I think, maybe misunderstand sometimes. You know, it's Liverpool don't look to put things out in the public domain. It's just that, you know, it's your job as a reporter to have relationships with different people at different levels of the club, and you try and you know, find out exactly what's going on, and you know that hasn't really changed. And you know, it's just been a bit of a frustration for, I think, probably for myself as much as any of the fans, that haven't really been that much to get your teeth into in the last few weeks, because they've pretty much hit a brick wall with, you know,
their main targets,
two big deals that they're pursuing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And listen, forgive me if I missed it. I don't know if you did an article on it, but have you had a chance to meet with the new CEO, or even have a chat with him, Peter Moore, and get a feel for what he's like?
Yeah, he came into the Echo offices for a coffee about, I think it was just after back end of the season, just before he started officially. So nice guy. You know, hopefully, you know, he's obviously got a fantastic, you know, business brain and a background, very successful career. I think, you know, I'm sure he'll probably be on the pre-season tour. I'm off to Hong Kong to cover those games over there next week.
Right.
Hopefully, a bit more to do with him going forward.
Yeah, good. And he seems to be doing all right on social media as well so far, doesn't he? He seems to have approached that in a certain way, and it seems to be going down well with the fans.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I think people appreciate that. I think it'll be interesting to see that, you know, what happens if the season doesn't start on a positive footing. We all hope that that's not the case. But you know, I think it's great the way that he's got a good sense of humour. He's embraced that side of it at the moment.
You'd want it with our fans, wouldn't you? In fairness.
Well, I think fans just, I think, you know, it's good to have that interaction, isn't it? So
no, absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
You'd just hope that people do cut in a bit of slack, and and give him the chance to make a big positive impression.
Yeah, I in a way, you know, I hope he's not making a rod for his own back, in the sense that, you know, all the interaction and all the, even the bit of banter with people, you know, where he gives them a little bit of stick back and whatever it might be. That's brilliant if we have a good summer window, you know, and get off to a good start. But if we don't secure the top targets and then look like we falter with our second choices, or don't seem to have the right second choices lined up, then all of a sudden that could look very poorly for him, you know, where it's going to be a lot of questioning around, you know, if he'd spent less time doing X and more time doing Y, maybe we'd have been, you know, even though that might not be a key part of his job, you know, in the current structure, which I'm not even sure it is, that still might be thrown at him, which would be a pity for a guy who's only starting out.
Yeah, and I think you're right. It has been. I've seen it thrown at him already on social media, and I think, yeah, some people maybe have got the wrong end of the stick slightly, because I've seen people, you know, tell him to get off Twitter and get himself over to Leipzig and
announce Van Dijk.
The fact of the matter is, his job is actually very different to Ian Ayres. I mean, he's not involved whatsoever in the negotiating of transfer deals. You know, that's very much Michael Edwards's domain. So yeah. FSG. It's very much changed the kind of job description for the CEO, and you know, he's all about the business side, yeah.
And probably how it should be.
Where his responsibility lies.
I think one of the biggest problems for Ian Ayres was maybe that he had too much to do in his role, too many sort of strings to his bow, and therefore a lot was able to be landed at his door when there was probably too big an ask on him for the job he was doing.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair comment. Yeah, and I think you can kind of, they probably admitted that with the fact that, you know, that they've almost got, you know, three people doing his job now, in terms of, you know, when you've got Michael Edwards with the football side of it, you've got, you know, Peter Moore, the CEO, you've obviously got Billy Hogan as the MD. So yeah, it's, you know, I think, you know, the structure they've got in place now is, you know, I think it's, you know, it's certainly got a much better look to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose us lads here, we still reckon you're the head of the transfer committee anyway, you know what I mean? So so that's another thing. We reckon we'll still get the inside scoop from you when things start to move. Listen, other than that, I you know, we could run through a couple of other things, but a lot of the stuff that people asked was along the lines of what we've covered. And I've tried to encompass the questions that were asked today into our chat. I suppose there is one other thing, and it's relating to your mate Tony Barrett. A couple of people are asking, number one, did you teach him how to tie a tie? And number two, and I suppose this is probably a little bit more of a serious question, and yet again you may not want to answer, but was that something that came out of the blue, not even that you know this, but did it come out of the blue for him, or was it something that was opened up and maybe people like yourself that were close to the club were spoken to about it and then it transpired for him?
To answer the first one, I definitely did not have anything to do with that that horrendous attire he had on when he walked into Melwood last week. Now, that was, I think my favourite comment was, I think obviously he copped an absolute barrage of abuse that day, and I think that my favourite one was someone said he looked like an Irish farmer who was on his way to the local village hall dance.
Down to Listunvarna to find a wife.
I must admit, it came out of the blue when he told me that was what he decided to go, obviously, to make that leap from Joe, who he was working for, to working for the club. But I think it's a great appointment by the club, because I think, you know, I think they were probably wary about the fact that, you know, no matter what you say about Ian Ayres, and obviously he had his critics, you know, he was very much a local fella,
yeah,
who, you know, it was, the club was in his blood. And I think with him moving on, I think FSG just felt that they probably looked at all of those senior positions, and, you know, they probably did, you know, what they were lacking was someone, you know, a local guy who's, you know, who's got the club running through his blood, that would be able to, you know, be a sounding board and, you know, probably try and avoid a few of the the issues that obviously that have raised their head at different times as FSG's reign. And, you know, I think, you know, it's a real coup for them to get Tony on board. And I think, you know, he feels as if it's like a really, you know, important role, you know, dealing with supporters groups. And, you know, he's obviously got a big job there, that, you know, and I think, you know, he can make a real difference on that front. So yeah, I think it's just despite all the Mickey taking that obviously went on when he started last week, I think, you know, it's a very wise appointment by the club, and, you know, he'll make a massive impression, and Liverpool will be a better club with him on the staff.
I think they'd be better off if they give him a club tracksuit to wear as his uniform as well. Save him the hassle, you know. No, listen.
It'd be safer.
Yeah, absolutely. James, absolutely top notch. I appreciate your time, and fair play to you for giving it up to us. We really do appreciate it. Maybe we can have a chat again. It's only six, seven weeks to the end of the transfer window. The season will have kicked off at that stage, and we'll all know on September 1st what our squad's looking like for the first half of the season. So maybe we can catch up with you again at that point, and we can have a yap about the business that has been done in that time and see where we're at. Would that be cool with you?
That sounds good. Yeah, no worries at all.
Brilliant, James. Listen, I really appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon.